All right. Good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you for taking your time joining this session on building the perfect image or Windows image. My name is Johan, and I will be your host for the next 75 minutes. I know it's late of the day, but I will do my very best to keep you awake. And by the way, I love questions. So any point in the session, feel free to ask a question if you have one. I'm also monitoring the official Twitter hashtag for this session on this computer screen right here. So if you do the hashtag and put that in front of the session code, and then you get rid of the dash in between, then you have the actual hashtag. So it's not really complicated. Fire up WordPad. Trying to get the mouse working. TEWCAB305. That's the hashtag if you want to tweet questions during the session. I will pick up a few of them here. If life is good, I can answer them all. If you post like 100, I won't have time for it, but I will make sure to answer your questions before I hit the sack later tonight. Go to bed. Now, I'm the chief technical architect with Knowledge Factory. I spend my working days traveling this blue planet of ours, helping customers, building deployment solutions. And I'm here today to share a bit of my notes from the field, lessons learned, and what I'm going to say. I mean, the title pretty much says it all. It says Windows 8, but I actually added a fourth pillar to the session, and that's the last bullet on this road here, and that's our legacy. And by legacy, I don't mean XP, I mean Windows 7, because companies are still deploying Windows 7 mostly, even though Windows 8 starts to pick up, Windows 7 is still the main OS. So everything that we cover here today in this session is also applicable for Windows 7, and also, of course, the various server editions. There is no difference in terms of setup and reference images when comparing client to a server. Same setup engine. So apart from the legacy, we have three main pillars. Universal images, the goal of having one way to create an image that will work in every type of deployment solution I'm using. That's a focus for that one. Then, once we have a good image, we need to deploy it. And the two solutions I will demonstrate today is light touch deployments and config manager deployments, because these are the only solutions that Microsoft provides in terms of deployment. Microsoft supplies have additional tools like ADK, Windows Deployment Services, and all that. Those are not deployment solutions. They are not meant to be used to deploy Windows with. They are core foundation. They are plumbing that either LightTouch MDT or Config Manager is using in the background. Now, for troubleshooting purposes, it's really useful to learn these tools, all the command line tools in the background, because they can help you troubleshoot more efficiently, but they are not a deployment solution. I was called 2 years ago down to a customer in Paris, France. They had been struggling for 3 weeks trying to build a deployment solution on their own based on, well, it was WYK at the time, but the equivalent of ADK now, writing their own scripts and such. And they gave up. And they were about to hit their window. They had 4 weeks to do it, and their 3 weeks had passed. So I flew down there quite quickly, and in about 3 hours, I have redeployed their deployment server, added in MDT LightTouch in that case, and they actually had a working deployment solution before lunch. So not reinventing the wheel was the sort of a learning curve from that story. Now, in terms of imaging, is anyone still on XP here? And still brave enough to raise their hand? Yeah, a few of you. Compared with XP, Windows 7 and Windows 8 images are a bit larger. A factor 5, 6, 7, 8 times larger than an XP image. So in Windows 7 and Windows 8 projects, You know all these projects you used to have where you centralized all the servers into a data center 3 years ago, 4 years ago? Guess what? They're going back out in the field again. Because you need to have content closer to the client when you are going to push an image that is maybe 5 gigs in size. You cannot have 50 clients in a remote office and try to pull a 5 gig image over a 4 megabit WAN link to those remote offices or those remote clients. So you need to have content closer to the clients. Most customers are using 64-bit versions of Windows, and that image is even bigger. The native image is about 2.6 gigabytes. You add in Office, you add in a few runtimes, .NET framework, a few updates, and you suddenly have an image that is 4 gigs in size at least, maybe more. So in terms of deployment scenarios, you need to stage content out there closer to the clients. Now, this is always an argument or a discussion that I need to have with customers when building deployment solutions. And I always go in hard. I fight hard to start with a thin image. Why do I do that? Why do I always want to start with a thin image? Because a thin image allows me the most flexibility when I deploy it. If I have a thin image, an image without applications, it means that I can detect this is an HP hardware. Because you are on HP hardware, you're supposed to have two applications. Because I deploy you in France, you're supposed to have 5 more applications. Because you belong to the whatever marketing department, you're supposed to have 10 more applications. So I can use dynamic conditions during my deployment to build an array, a list of applications that I feed into my deployment. I can have different language packs being deployed. The more stuff you put into your image, the more static it becomes and the less flexible it becomes. But sometimes I have to give up. I was working with a customer a few years ago. It was in Birmingham, and Birmingham, Alabama, that's in the middle of nowhere on the other side of the pond. I did my usual speech. We're going to have the thin image. And management said, yes, we're going to have a thin image. And I was like, great, this is good. And then they told me, well, we have this engineering department, 200 CAD stations, and per our agreement with them, we need to deploy them, be able to redeploy them within 2 hours with 200 applications. That was no way I was going to be able to have a thin image and deploy 200 apps afterwards and still hit that 2 hour window. So what we decided to do, we actually decided up having two images. One thin image for the majority of the company, and then a thicker image that was based on the thin image that we used for the engineers. Because those CAD applications, they were big, really big, and they were time-consuming to deploy. So sometimes you have to do sort of a balance there. And of course, you can sit anywhere in between these. You can do hybrids. For example, if everybody in your organization is supposed to have Office, why not include Office in your image? It's a perfectly good application to include. You can update it. It's part of your build. It's quite big. It's time-consuming to deploy over the network. And when it's stored in the WIM file, it's actually compressed. So it's really nice to the network when you deploy it. But as I said, start with thin. That's my recommendation. And if needed, for example, a time concern, it can be an educational, a school, university that needs to deploy a classroom quickly, fine, add more applications to it. But know this, the more stuff you put into an image, the more expensive it becomes to manage it, the more often you need to update it. But sometimes it's worth that time, it's worth that effort to get a quick deployment. Now, when creating reference images, I recommend to use standard solutions from Microsoft. I recommend to use MDT, LightTouch, no matter what you are going to use that reference image for. How many of you are using Config Manager in the room? I would say 60, 65% of you are using Config Manager. Isn't it so that I can actually create reference images in Config Manager, technically? Yeah, I can do that. So why do I recommend not using Config Manager to create my reference images? For one, speed. And I should not be saying this, because I'm a consultant. I bill by the hour. And if I would do it in Config Manager, it will take me more hours, and I will make more money doing that reference image. But the reason I do it in LightTouch, it's about twice as fast, at least twice as fast, as do it in Config Manager. And I'm not only talking about the actual deployment speed, I'm talking about the hours spent in a project. So maybe 4 days if I do it in Config Manager, 2 days if I do it in LightTouch. So that's one reason. The other reason is the first bullet here, standardization, having a very compatible image. If you guys use LightTouch to build your reference image, you can deploy it with everything on the planet. You can deploy it with Altiris. You can deploy it with LightTouch. You can deploy it with Windows Deployment Services. You can deploy it with Config Manager. You can import it into VMM library and import it through there, or deploy it through there. You can deploy it through the VDI solutions. You can import it into your VMware library and deploy it from there. So by not using Config Manager to create a reference image, you can have a single solution to do it for every type of deployment you do in the organization. Now, for those of you that are starting to do Config Manager deployments and OSD in Config Manager, there is a bit of a learning curve to it. Simply admit, it's a bit of a learning curve. Once you're over it, life is good, but to get there, it's a bit of a learning curve. LightTouch, it's much quicker to learn. And by learning LightTouch, you accidentally, on the fly, on the road, on the way, you learn how to do Config Manager deployments as well. Because it's the Config Manager team who writes the sequences for LightTouch. It's just a standalone version of the same sequence engine. And last year, MDT used to be a separate solution accelerators team. Not anymore. Microsoft now has an enterprise client management giant sphere team, organization, or part of organization. In enterprise client manage, you have Config Manager and you have Intune. MDT now belongs to Config Manager. So it's the Config Manager OSD team that also develops MDT, which makes sense. I mean, OSD is OSD, but you have to provide a free solution as well. It's hard to sell Windows if you can't provide with a free tool to deploy it. I mean, if you have Config Manager, great, but not everybody on the planet has it. And Microsoft still has to provide a decent deployment solution for those people. And that's where MDT comes in play. Second, or third, whatever, there is a function in Windows. It's called copy profile. Especially if you're running things like this, Windows 8, you may want to customize the start screen, which in the current version of Windows 8, it's a tad difficult. But you can do it in the reference image. You can actually pause the process and you can click around and do and fix whatever you like. And that information is being saved in your profile if you do your reference image in LightTouch. Because everything you do in LightTouch is stored in the admin profile. And what you guys can do at deployment time, when you deploy that image through either LightTouch or through Config Manager, you can tell them to copy that admin profile into the default user profile so that every new user of these machines that you deploy will get the same foundation, the same base settings that you had in your reference image. If you build your images in Config Manager, guess what? By default, you don't get an admin profile that you can stop and customize. You actually have to do a full rebuild and then customize and then capture, and automation just went out the door. So by doing it in LightTouch, you get the admin profile and you can copy it when you deploy that through Config Manager. It turns out simply to be it's difficult to copy something you don't have. So by using LightTouch, you actually have it and it can be copied. Of course, everything should be fully automated. Always. There is one sure thing to upset me, to make my colors go from fairly brown until like red or purple in my head. And that is showing me a 10-page document with a title saying, how to create a new reference image. And then seeing someone manually flipping page after page after page, trying to repeat that image that did half a year ago, and try to make it equally good as the last time. That's not automation, that's not quality, that's begging for problem. Because an error in the image doesn't exactly go smaller because you decide to deploy it to 2,500 machines. It's quite the opposite. If you do it really bad, it can actually be, it's called a career-limiting move in the US, but I guess it's a similar way here. It can actually destroy things if your image is broken. By automation, it will be equally good every single time. Now, can PowerPoint please wake up? Or not? There we go. Just needed some fault. It's a lot of words to build up on the screen there. A second way to upset me, a pretty sure way to upset me as well, is to show me a physical machine that you use to create your reference images on. Don't do that. Use a virtual machine. I don't care if it's Hyper-V or VMware, but any of those two works great. But use a VM, because that's the most efficient one. You can use snapshots, and you get a very compatible image. If you have an issue with your image and you build it in a VM, you can rule out hardware from the problem. It's not going to be hardware. It's going to be something else. But if you build on physical machines, you may run into problems. A very good example is seeing one customer building on HPs. It was a few years ago, but they were using HPs to build their image. And when they update that image, they run Windows Update, they also install the HP Hotkeys application and service. And SysPrep, of course, deletes the driver, but not the app and the service. And then they took that image and deployed to Lenovo's. Turned out that the Hotkeys service for HP doesn't play very nice on Lenovo machines. And when you try to uninstall the application, you get an error saying, oh, sorry, the setup can only be run on HP hardware. But you were on the Lenovo. If you were building in a VM instead, life is good. So you get a good image, it's very easy to transport between people, and you can use snapshots to get efficient when building these. All right. Two marketing terms. Unfortunately, they are also used to display, explain products. Light Touch is the name of the standalone free deployment solution based out of MDT. CDI, Zero Touch, is based out on Config Manager, where you added MDT on top of it, simply the additional components. It has nothing to do with the level of automation, which the name actually implies. A light touch deployment solution based on the free tools can be as automated as you guys want it. The only difference is, by default, it's not. By default, there is a wizard that starts that allows you to select sequence, type in a computer name, select domain, select application, but you can automate that wizard through changing a simple .ini file on the server. Config Manager, on the other hand, is by default automated. But if you want a wizard, you can enable one, because there is one built in that you can enable. So it doesn't really matter what deployment solution you're using. It's you guys that decides the level of automation. It's you that decide what it's going to be, a wizard, meaning light touch, or fully automated, meaning zero touch. I don't like these names, but that's what we have to play with. All right. This is my last slide. Now we have a 54-minute demo coming up. All right. If I can make this switch works. I got trained yesterday because Kent is in the audience. He granted me the responsibility for 5 sessions to switch the screen, which I learned well after doing it 60 times. Now, this is my demo environment. I have a somewhat powerful laptop. Few solid state drives in it, a little bit of memory, but this is actually enough to run a complete lab setup of LightTouch, Config Manager, Exchange, Orchestrator, Service Manager, a few routers, well, a few VMs shorthand. This laptop will actually outperform most servers that we have in our own data center because of the solid state drives. So if there is one single thing you should go home and ask your manager about, and yes, you can quote me on this, you should have a solid state drive that you can use in your lab environment, because that will increase the deployments by a factor of 10, not percent, times 10 easily. So that's the best friend you can have when you're doing lab, and et cetera. Now, on this server here, I have downloaded and installed LightTouch. When you do that, you get a deployment workbench, and in that workbench, you create folders, and you need at least one folder. Microsoft called them deployment shares, but it's really a folder. If I go to my file system, this is the folder. If I go to operating systems, this is where I find my images. If I go to applications, this is where I find my apps. But the workbench is simply the admin UI to which I'm managing this folder. If you're extremely hardcore, for example, if I go in here and create a folder, test 45, in the end of every wizard in the UI, there is a view script button that will show me the PowerShell script to do exactly what I did in the console. So if I want to, of course, I can click through everything once and just record and copy-paste the PowerShell script. And you can do everything in PowerShell. And in fact, you can do more in PowerShell than you can actually do in the UI. For example, it's not possible in the UI to duplicate the sequence like you can in the Config Manager console. But using PowerShell, you can. So I'm just going to delete that folder I created. All right. So this is the one I'm using for reference images. I start to add in a few applications that make sense to have in a reference image. And these applications, to me, make sense. Because these applications, at least these, they are runtimes. They are a requirement for my apps to work. It turns out that very few customers actually deploy Windows just to have it sit there. They normally want to run apps on it. So why not add in the runtimes, the components that apps needs into the reference image? I mean, they are going to install it anyway. Why not simply add them in from the beginning? So .NET Framework is useful to add either 3.5 for those applications or 4.0 for those, and even 4.5 for those applications that have those. Not needed in Windows 8 because Windows 8 has 4.5 included by default, and 4.0 as well, of course. This is actually the one I'm using for Windows 7 because Windows 7 does not come with .NET Framework 4 by default. All right. Now, as you can see, I'm adding in 8 different runtimes for C++. Because if you do the counting here, you can say there is 8, right? I'm using wrappers. I'm using VB scripts in the background. So if I go to properties of an application, you can see that the command line to install it, it simply is VB script. If I look in that VB script, and yes, these scripts were posted yesterday on my blog. My blog is deploymentresearch.com. There where you can download all the scripts. Not only from this session, but from every session I do here on TechEd. So go back to my session here. Now, the reason I have a wrapper is because the C++ runtime comes in two flavors, 32 and 64-bit. And instead of having two apps, I simply wrap them into one. So I'm actually detecting, I will always install the 32-bit one, but if I detect a 64-bit OS, I actually go ahead and also install the 64-bit one. So in the header of the script, this is where I keep the command lines and the command line arguments. So for different applications that needs a wrapper, I'm simply copy and paste this, and then life is good. The reason I use VBScript is simply I already have these since a long time ago, and I just continue to use them. I have also created wrappers for PowerShell that you also can download from my blog if you prefer to run PowerShell scripts instead to running VBScript. But again, I already had these. I didn't see quite the point of redoing it again when it was working, but you can do it in PowerShell, of course. So I have these apps, and then I add my operating systems. And everything from XP up to Windows 8 is supported, but of course you're supposed to be deploying Windows 7 or Windows 8. So I have added in the Enterprise 8 image. Right-click, import, point it to a location, bam, you have the image imported. Then you do not worry about drivers. Again, you're using a virtual machine. There is no point of putting drivers in the reference image. Sysprep is going to yank them anyway when you run sysprep as part of your sequence. It was different back in the XP days, because then if you had unknown devices in Device Manager, they could actually prevent you from installing that driver later on, but not in Windows 7 and not in Windows 8, so don't worry about drivers. The only time I actually add drivers to a reference image here is if I'm using older VMware servers where the mouse will actually stutter a bit in WinP or sometimes even in Windows, unless I add in the VMware mouse driver into my boot image. So sometimes I add in that boot image or that driver into the image, but otherwise this is empty. Then I have my sequences. So this is a sequence that will deploy a Windows 8 image. This is simply the start-to-go action of things to do when I start my deployment. So in the beginning, this sequence will format the drive, and no, there is no point of having multiple volumes in a reference image. If you want multiple volumes, that's something you add at deployment time. For example, if you're deploying servers, you probably have more than one disk. It could make sense to create more volumes, but don't put them in the reference image. There is no point. That's something you do at deployment time. Then, of course, I will apply the image to the drive, no biggie. And then, as you can see, I've added in .NET Framework 3.5, which includes 2 and 3. And I've also added in the runtimes. And in this case, I actually added in Office as well. So I created a customized install of Office through the customization wizard, and then I added that one in. And then what I do is I enable this. It's disabled by default, so you enable it by going here and clearing this disable step action. I would like to have it the opposite around, but this is how you do it. Now, by default, if I do this, the sequence will do everything up here, and then it will come here and go directly to Microsoft Update and get all the updates needed for this machine and reboot as many times as needed. Don't do this. If you build a reference image 20 times, it will fail 2 times because the script is not very good in dealing with timeouts. The fix, simple. Have a local WSUS server. And for all those of you over here in here running Config Manager, this is the downside of using LightTouch, because now you need to spawn up a separate WSUS server not connected to a Config Manager, and you need to manage it separately. It will take you at least 10 minutes to do, but you need to do it, and you need to keep on managing that box. It will only be used for reference images, but you need to do that. That's the downside of using LightTouch. To get this to work, you need to go into the folder, find the .ini file that controls everything, and you need to tell it, instead of going to Microsoft Update, which may fail, go ahead and use this server instead, whatever name it is. If you're using 2008 R2, most likely you're using the default port. If you're using Server 2012, it's most likely installed to a custom port, but that's something you can simply look up in the WSUS server. But this is everything you need to do. Changing this .ini file, tell it, go ahead, look on this server, and get the updates from that one. assuming you have approved the updates on that WSOC server. So I have my sequence, I will install the apps, I will do the Windows update as many times as needed, and then eventually it will actually go down here, run sysprep, and create the WIM file and store it on the server. So far, install MDT, add stuff, apps, OS, create sequences, and then you update the folder. Because when you do, you get the boot image, a bootable ISO. Then you simply take a VM, as I said, either Hyper-V or VMware. You go to a clean snapshot. You mount it on that ISO. And then you go away and find the coffee machine, load it with water, some coffee, and you turn it on because it's going to be used shortly. You can see WinP4 is booting. You can recognize the start screen. It will load the network shortly, and it will connect back to my deployment share, and it will give me two options here, two selections. One, which sequence to actually run. Two, where to store the result from it. And the reason I get two questions is I designed it that way. In my init file on the server, I said, do not skip asking me for sequences, and do not skip, I actually didn't say that one, so let me open the original one, and do not ask me for capture. So no sequences and no capture. So if I go to my client, I will select my sequence, I will select where to store it, and now I will have that cup of coffee. Because this will take an hour. It will now complete the sequence, install all the applications, run Windows updates as many times as needed, run sysprep, capture the WIM file, and store it on the server. I now have a fully automated process to create a reference image. And even if you've never done this before in your life, it will take about an hour to do this from scratch. It's very simple, and this image that you get here can be used to deploy everything, or from everything. All right, what if I wanted to automate even that? Well, it turns out you can say skip sequence selection. And often when you skip things in the wizard, you have to supply a value that would identify the selection you would have done. And in this case, I specify the ID of the sequence. I may skip summary or capture as well, and then I need to supply the WIM file name and where to store it, of course. I can add in MAC address here and say that if I have a virtual machine with this MAC address, it's a Hyper-V box, you should use this sequence. If it's another virtual machine, you should be using this sequence. Now, is it possible to pre-create the VM with a specific MAC address? Yes, it is. Could it be that you can actually have a PowerShell script that will actually create a new virtual machine on the fly, connect it to boot on that ISO, loop while waiting, and when it's completed, delete it? Yes, you can. By running this PowerShell script, it will build a VM, complete the deployment, run sysprep, store the WIM file on the server, delete the VM. So every time I need a new reference image, I simply run this script. It doesn't get much more automated than that. And yes, that script is available as well. Now, what if you have that super complex CAD application I was talking about before, or a setting in the operating system that is extremely difficult to automate? Well, guess what? In LightTouch, it's very easy to add in a pause into the sequence. There's a built-in option called Suspend. It's not available in the menu. You have to know it exists. But if you know it, and you know now, you can simply add it to the sequence. It's that script. What the sequence will do is will do everything up to here, and then it will abort the sequence engine, and it will give you a shortcut on the desktop that says resume sequence. At that point in time, you have a VM logged in as administrator, where you can install something manually. You can reboot the VM 10 times because the sequence is aborted at that point. Or we'll do whatever configuration you like to do manually. I mean, the goal is to be automated, but sometimes there is that thing that is difficult to automate, and you can actually use the suspend function to do that. So what do you do then after you have done your manual change? Any ideas? Clicking the shortcut could be a good idea. Actually, no. Take a snapshot, then click the shortcut. Because if you have a snapshot at that point, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, you can quickly revert to that snapshot. And you just saved about 40 minutes of deployments if you want to do another test. Another change, new snapshot. And suddenly you just begin to build a hierarchy of snapshots, different versions of your reference image that you can jump very quickly back and forth into, again, reducing the time needed for the project. And of course, why not enable the update action after the suspend, so that you're make sure you actually get the latest updates before sysprep is run as well. This is a dead simple solution to create reference images. All right. Now, what to do with it once we have that WIM file? Well, let's start with Config Manager. I will go back to LightTouch later on. So this is my Config Manager 2012. You simply right-click here in the console, and you add your image. And now becomes the difficult part, because you actually need to browse it and select the WIM file. So it makes good habit to actually record where you stored it in the previous exercise, and then life is good. So you add the WIM file. The cool thing about Config Manager is that once you have downloaded and deployed updates in Config Manager through the software update point, they can be actually injected into the WIM file here. So I can right-click my Windows 8 image and say, all right, schedule updates. And it will give me a listing of all available updates for Windows 8 that can be injected offline off this on the server. This doesn't remove the need for having a reference image. It doesn't. But this feature allows you to not have to regenerate it as often, because you can now inject the updates on the server. Not every update, only the component-based servicing updates. So for example, not Office. If you need to update Office, you start that VM again, or you run that PowerShell script again so that Office is up to date as well. If you try to do this with a server image, you may get surprised, because this is a server 2012 image. And I have updates deployed to this image. It's unfortunately a little bug. The fix isn't that difficult. Instead of selecting the correct architecture, you select another architecture, and you will see the updates. I don't know if that's being fixed in the update that was released. Was it the day before yesterday, or was it Friday? A few days ago. I haven't tested that one yet. But it's still not fixed in CU1 at least, which I guess most of you are running at this point. I know they know about it, so eventually it will be fixed, but I haven't tested it yet, so I don't know. But you can do that for server images as well. Now, once you add the image into Config Manager, well, the only thing you need to do is to create new sequences. And for those of you that comes from CMO 7, do you have one still on CMO 7 here? A few of you, 10 people maybe. The image that I created, if that image would have been a Windows 7, you can actually deploy it with CMO 7 as well. But you cannot deploy a Windows 8 image with it, of course. Now, this is a sample image or a sample sequence. And as you can see, I have integrated Config Manager with MDT. And the reason you can see that is because you have like a bunch of actions in the sequence compared with the one that you have native in Config Manager. The reason I recommend to add MDT or integrate with MDT is that it adds about 280, no, exactly 280, and I know because I made that list in Excel. It adds 280 features related to OSD for Config Manager. And the likeliness that you are going to need at least one of them is really high. So the only recommendation I have, before you guys start to create your own scripts, your own databases, and your own solutions, try to download what's already available for free, supported, and see if the stuff you're trying to do, it's not already in there. My favorite example is, I said it probably 10 times, but I was working with a customer. They were writing scripts for days. 4 days, multiple people, to deal with regional settings in Config Manager. Because Config Manager, not even 2012, has a default UI to deal with regional settings as part of my deployment. Or they could have just downloaded ready-made script that is supported by Microsoft and used them instead. So 12-man days or download free stuff that is supported, which is complex. More complex, I would say, creating scripts is more complex. I had a question in the back. Yes, sir. So the question was, what if can't I simply have it running in the VM all time and simply continue the sequence when needed? Well, of course you can, but it's equally quick to just resume the snapshot and continue and capture it. So,
if you don't want to do that, you could probably.
So the question is, have I seen any issues around using a VM with the standalone WSOS? No, I have not. That's what I do every day of the week, every year, and for many years, meaning I'm old. So that really works well. I haven't seen any issues at all with it. What you may run into, which is fun, is that you update your reference image today, right now. And then you deploy it through Config Manager, and Config Manager finds 3 updates. Yet you updated the image like 3 seconds ago. That could be because of a feature in the LightTouch script that does Windows Update. If there is an update that requires reinstall because of another update, the script will actually not do that. So that's why you may miss 2 or 3 updates. If you can't live with that, you can fix it. There is a gentleman, he's a Russian guy, works now in the US, Mr. Alex sent me something, Mr. Alex CDI Windows Update, it's his name. Here we go. If you really want that script to install every single update, you can download a script that, a script that will clear the array in between the attempts, and that will solve that problem. But I normally don't care too much about that, because Config Manager and LightTouch will happily install those updates afterwards anyway. But if you really want to make sure it's totally up to date, you can add this to your sequence as well. But again, this is a rock solid procedure. But I can't say I have tested to run the client at all times. I simply just save it, and when I need to update it, I resume and continue. It will do the delta, it will run the sysprep, and it will capture it. I hope that answered your questions. All right, beautiful. It's a good question. Another really good question is from Lionel here in the Twitter feed. Why use a local sus, WSUS, if you can inject updates directly into the Vim? For example, as I showed you in Config Manager. Simply because there are updates available in WSUS that you cannot do offline injection with. Office is an extraordinarily good example. Right. So in Config Manager, I recommend to add in MDT because it adds many features related to OSD. It actually reduces complexity, even though most people think it's the opposite. And I have seen quite many customers, and I have been arguing with quite many customers about using the integration. I have met many people saying, we will never use it. So far, I have never lost a discussion once I actually demonstrated the benefits of doing the integration. So, yes, sir. So the question is, does it have a detection for managing language packs? Very good question. Yes. If you import in the packages node, you can add in, well, you can download updates manually and add them in here. Don't do that. But you can add language packs in here. And you can also add in hotfixes that is not available through WSUS. So hotfixes that you have to send an email and require through an email through Microsoft support. They can be added in here. And if I have an image that is supposed to be used in 4 or 5 countries, I normally add the language packs in here so they are added to my reference image. If I work with a company that have 18 language packs, I don't add them to the image. I simply add them as application at deployment time. So I will detect in what country the image is being deployed, and then I deploy the correct app. But if it's only 4 or 5, it makes sense to put them in the image, because then the only thing I need to do in Config Manager, or LightTouch for that matter, is to find a text file somewhere. And if it's a language pack, I simply add this logic to it. Default gateway is a built-in option. I specify my default gateways. And if I'm deploying a machine in Las Vegas, in this case, it will get a Swedish language. If it's in Stockholm, it's also Swedish language. So maybe we will do EN US over here. But it's very easy to feed the sequence with different settings from a simple text file. I know you can do this through scripts or through other rules or collection variables in Config Manager, but this is a nice overview. And the cool thing about this ini file is that this one can be simulated. You can test the deployment in 10 seconds flat to verify it works if you have the integration. If you don't have the integration, you have to do a full deployment just to realize, ah, crap, typo, wrong value, wrong property, whatever. Yes? Where do I reference this IMI file? In the sequence. there is a gather action in the sequence. One is over here, for example. So that one will reference and say, get this .ini file from this package, please. And then it will read it. So when you create the sequence, when you use the wizard here, it will actually prompt you to create such a package if you don't have one already. Yep. The settings pack, the question is, the settings package, is that part of the MDT package? No, it's a separate package. But of course, if you wanted to, you can combine them, but I normally keep them separately. It's a very small package. It only contains the .ini file and the unattended XML file used for the deployment. So when I do a deployment with Config Manager, it's actually three things that happens. And the first thing is that the gather action runs, and that will read the .ini file and store that in memory and on an encrypted file on disk. Then, a bit later in the sequence, there is a configure action. This one will do two things. And the first thing is it will actually copy the unattended template from the server down to the client. Not to the root, but to the client. Config manager in the SMS sequence folder, in LightTouch into the MiniEntity folder. And then it will simply update the local unattended from the values that was being read here. So if this line here figured out that my UI language was supposed to be Swedish, it will be the configure action that on the fly during deployment writes that into the unattended XML file. And then setup is kicking in and will use the now updated unattended file. This is dynamics. Having rules being generated on the fly, feeding settings into the unattended file as part of your deployment, instead of having a static deployment. So for example, what I can do here is I can say UR language US, UR language Sweden, and I can run a simulation. I can open up a PowerShell command prompt. Ah, crap. I have to type correctly as well. And I can run the gather script, because both for LightTouch and for Config Manager, if you copy the following scripts to a folder, and I have this documented on my blog as well, and this session is recorded, so you have the option of reviewing this, I can simulate the deployment. So I will run the gather script, so I have created a batch file that will run the gather script. So I can run that, and it will now simulate the deployment without having to go the entire hour, but rather than about 10 seconds. So now I can review the log file to see my settings for this deployment. And for every deployment I do, MDT learns quite much about your machine. For example, that I have 12 network cards in my laptop, as you should. But it learns about hardware, model, product, MAC address. It's a laptop, apparently. And everything it finds, I can use as condition in my rule set. Of course, it didn't read my .ini file because I didn't specify that .ini file. But if I do my default gateway and save the file, it will see that it was trying to find the default gateway for 10.5.0.1. Didn't have one. The default gateway on this host is actually here. So if I wanted to test this, I would have to take that IP address. And now my machine is in Vegas. I run the script again. So you can see it found a default gateway matching that, and it actually read the language from that section. But the ability of doing tests like this is really efficient when trying to save time. All right. When adding the sequence into a config manager, there are some things you need to do to get it to work, because the default sequence template is a bit broken. There are three fixes you need to do. The first fix is to go down here and change this one to true. It's set to false by default, and if you leave it like that and you create a reference image, it will end up on the D drive, even though your reference image was on the C drive. This was a change in Service Bug 1. So either set this to true or delete it and life is good. Then it will honor what you have in the ref image. The second one, and that's actually quite an ugly one, in the Windows setting, in the sequence template, this is the default behavior or setting. I can tell you this, it's really easy to log on to a machine that has been deployed with a default template because the admin password is blank. I recommend, if you're not using the wizard, set it to random and disable the account, or if you really want the local password because you want to use wizards and such, go and set something, but don't use a blank password. And the final piece is that Config Manager, as you guys know, supports three scenarios: bare metal, refresh, and replace. One of them is broken. Badly broken. It's the replace. A replace scenario means I have an old machine that has stuff on it I want to keep. So I will run a backup of the old machine up to a server somewhere. Then I unpack my brand new machine from the box, put it on the bench, run through a bare metal install, and I expect that install to restore my backup. They kind of forgot to add that step to do the restore. So how on earth you can miss to test a restore in one of the three core scenarios, I don't know. But I know how to fix it. And the fix, find the set status 5 action, and after that action, add in request state store. That's the thing you need to do in Config Manager to get the restore requested and later being restored by this step down here. So add that in. And yes, if you go to my blog, you have details of this. And again, this video is recorded, so you have it there as well. If you can't wait until tomorrow when the video is available, I did this in New Orleans 2 weeks ago, and those videos are available as well on Channel 9 for download. All right. Then, in Config Manager, about fixing these features in the sequence, you simply have to worry about drivers. That's about it. I have an entire section or session on some of the days. I don't remember which. It's going into a blur right now. I blame Kent because he had me to do 5 sessions yesterday in a row. But it's on Friday morning, 8:30. There is an entire session on working with drivers. This will be a 2-minute version of that session. So in Config Manager, you have to import drivers. That's new in 2012. In CMO 7, you didn't have to. And I quite like that fact that you didn't have to, but now you have to. So you right-click and you import drivers. You can organize in folders. There is absolutely no point of doing that, because if you have a folder and you try to right-click and try to import a driver, well, you can't do that. It's grayed out. So what I recommend when you import a driver, instead of working with the folders like you probably did in CMO 7, at least I did that in CMO 7, when you import the driver, when you specify a source hierarchy for it, and try to type it correctly. Ah. So I'm adding drivers for an 8560. What I recommend to do is to tag them during import. So in this case, I will tag the driver with something useful, like Windows 8 maybe, or the model name, anything that makes sense to you. Because anything that you tag the driver with during import, you can search for in the console. So if you go to drivers, you can search for 8560, and you will only see the 8560 drivers. And now you can, for example, select one, and you can see in which packages that driver is being used. Do not do the mistake of deleting a driver here, because that will delete it from every package that is using that driver. If you need to remove a driver from a package, click Edit Package. And then you can add or remove it from multiple packages. Because this is how I recommend to do drivers in Config Manager. To have a driver package per model and per OS family. I know it's a bit of extra work, but it's not that difficult. It turns out that in Config Manager SP1, PowerShell is king. Some 500 commandlets available to you. And a world full of PowerShell gurus, like Kaido from Cortec, who likes to write PowerShell scripts for Config Manager. Yes, you can download them from the blog. It's part of the sample files. If you have a folder structure like this, where you have a few drivers, a few hundred models, maybe, a big repository, you simply run the PowerShell script and you specify this folder. It will import the drivers into Config Manager, tag them with the folder name, and create a package out of each model folder. I did that for 125 models for a customer. It took 9 hours to run that script. But I did it once. Then I only add the delta. If you want to do the same for Light Touch, you will simply search my last name and PowerShell is king, and you will find a PowerShell script that will do the same in the Light Touch console. From the folder structure, import, categorize, organize, create what's needed. Yes? Why I like driver packages? Because they always work. Always work. The default behavior in Config Manager, I guess that's why the question came. If I go to a sequence that I haven't destroyed too much, maybe this one. Well, I didn't quite destroy it, but this is the default action. This is the default settings in the sequence for drivers. What it will do a plug-and-play ID scanning of every driver that you have imported and try to inject the matching drivers, assuming it finds the hardware. Assuming your Bluetooth or wireless or whatever device is actually on or connected during deployment. Assuming you're not deploying fancy two-tier driver hardware like broadband adapters, some sound cards, some network cards even, then the PNP detection may fail. But if you're a small customer, you have 5 models, you don't change much, well, you can just go for the default option. Import the drivers and hope for the best. But if you grow larger, I actually recommend take the time, put them into a package, because then you can add the package in. I go ahead and disable this one again. And I set the condition to that package. And in this case, I'm setting a condition to only inject this package if the model actually likes that string, containing that string. I'm not using equal, I'm using like. Yes? So the question was, what about Windows 7 and the inbox drivers that you have? The built-in drivers, I do not touch. I never touch the inbox drivers. I don't even delete them if I have to. I fix it with other means. The most common reason to wanting to delete an inbox driver is that it's better than the third-party one you want to use. A typical example is you have a video driver, and you deploy it to an image, and yet for some reason it's still using the standard VGA driver, even though you actually downloaded the correct driver from the vendor. And when you go into Device Manager manually and select it after deployment, it accidentally works. So why didn't Windows figure out which one to use? And that's because Windows is using a ranking process to find drivers. And sometimes you need to make a driver better by actually modifying the driver. So I would rather go and modify a vendor driver than starting deleting inbox driver outside an image. The downside of modifying a driver is that the very minute you change a single byte in a driver, you break signing. And I can tell an unsigned driver, ConfigMana is not going to be happy about it. And Windows is going to put it last in the selection process. So if you run into that scenario, that very specific scenario, and I've done it like 3 times in my life when I really needed to modify a driver. But 3 times is more than one, so I wrote a blog post about it. So if you go to my blog and you search for sign drivers, and a word after, you will find a step-by-step guide how to sign an unsigned driver if needed so that Windows and Config Manager is happy. It will take like 10 minutes, but at least then you have a signed driver. Okay. Now, what about Light Touch? Well, for Light Touch, I simply create another folder. I don't have to, but I do it because I like to keep my reference images separate from my production deployments. And here I import my custom image that I got from my first folder. And then I create sequences like I would do in Config Manager. But drivers I do differently. Like I do driver packages in Config Manager, I create folders in Light Touch because that's the equivalent to a driver package. So I have a folder for each model. It's still in a single instance, like Config Manager. Even though I have many models having the same driver visible in the UI, it's only being stored once in the file system in the background, anyway. So I have folders for each model, and then I simply go into my sequence, and in that node or face that installs drivers, I add this property to it to say, hey, when you're looking for drivers, please look into this. Because you might remember when I run my simulation, in the log file here, I have the model. And this model was EliteBook 8540. That's model property being translated into this during deployment. And as long as I actually name my folders correctly, I will have a match. And once I do that, I also go to an inject drivers action and say, disable plug and play. And this label means disable plug and play. It's not very clear, but it's disable plug and play. What I'm saying, simply get the drivers that is in that folder and add it to the store. And this also, like Config Manager, allow you to add packages with drivers for hardware that is not all available on the machine. For example, if you know that you are going to attach a normal keyboard like this with a smart card reader, or a phone, or a scanner, or a printer, or whatever, you can create a packet with those devices and deploy it to the machine, or in this case, in LightTouch, add it to a folder. And that driver will be staged into the driver store, so once a normal user actually injects the hardware, they will be allowed to install that device. Because since Windows Vista, well, Windows 7 and Windows 8 nowadays, don't deploy Windows Vista, please, it will be happily installed, unless the driver calls a co-installer that needs to run a setup of some kind. I wouldn't mention any vendors, but HP is known for that. Then they need to be an admin, but otherwise they don't need to be an admin. So you as administrators can pre-stage drivers into the store that a normal user can actually deploy. Okay. An excellent question from Emilios, with the reservation for pronunciation here. Where are all the stuff that you can use in an INI file stored? For example, I was talking about this example before by laptop, where I'm using an INI file to, in this case, it's Config Manager, but I'm installing a Cisco VPN client if it's a laptop, and I'm enabling BitLocker, and I'm putting the machine in the laptop's OU. But if I would deploy a desktop, it will detect that and instead disable BitLocker and put it into the desktop's OU. All these properties that you can use here and to answer the questions, they are actually in the help file. So if you go to the workbench and go help, you go to the preference, properties, property definition, and you will have a long list of properties you can use, and whether that property is for the standalone, or for Config Manager, or in this case, for both. If you go one more step beyond what I'm doing here in terms of deployment, on my blog you also find ready-made kits with ready-made deployment shares that you can download. They're not very big, but you can download them. They contain ready-made sequences, for example, to build a domain controller. Install DNS, Active Directory, DHCP, everything. Or, why not, deploy a deployment server that you can use to create reference images. It will build you a complete deployment server. Install Pixie, ADK, SQL, and everything you need. Or why not, if you want to build a Config Manager lab, have a sequence that actually builds a Config Manager server for you. If you search for the term hydration on the blog, you will find plenty of articles related to that. And I'm not the only one. Microsoft does this. They have several kits available. Other fellow deployment geeks out there, they build hydration kits, like Michael Nystrom, for example, like Tim Nielema. All really cool stuff. All right. If you want to see or find additional resources for deployment, that site, deploymentartist.com, contains links to trainings, videos, books, free videos as well, and a bunch of articles related to OSD. I also keep a link section to all the other sites I normally go to myself to learn more about OSD as my week goes along. And with that, I have been asked, very politely, to please remind you of the fill in the evals. It's still being done on Channel 9. And as always, I usually say this, please be honest, but gentle. And thank you for taking your time. Thank you, guys.